Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Peggy Scott Laborde about this year's Tennessee Williams and New Orleans Literary Festival. We'll also hear from Tom Andes, whose new novel, A Mystery, is Wait There Till You Hear From Me. Tennessee Williams and New Orleans Literary Festival is hard upon us this week, and we thought we'd catch up with Peggy Scott Laborde, who was one of the founders of the festival 40 years ago. And so we thought we'd look back at 40 years of this remarkable event. Peggy, take us back to that origin story, that lunch where you and a few others got together to come up with the idea.
What a time it was, and it is hard to believe, 40 years ago.
Yes.
Actually, let me give you a little bit of that background. My husband, Errol Laborde, who was at the time the editor of Gambit, and then went on, of course, to be with New Orleans Magazine and their publications. Errol and Beverly Gianna with the Tourist Commission then had been talking about doing some kind of book-related event, you know, mini festival. And, you know, knowing that we have this rich, as you well know, this rich literary heritage, we've got the Jazz Fest, there were various food events, but there really wasn't something focusing on the heritage that we have with our literary scene. And so they wanted to do something. And so, as it turns out, a few weeks later, Errol and I were at Le Petit Theater. And at that point, Don Marshall, you know, who had been, of course, at the Contemporary Arts Center for a long time, was the executive director at Le Petit. And so we're there for a meeting of this small carnival organization, kind of post-clones, like kind of before Coup de Vue, there was something else. There were a few groups that started. We're there for that, and I just happened to see Don in the halls. And Don's such a great guy, and I said, hey, you know, we're doing this group, but also Errol and Beverly are talking about trying to do something, you know, a literary, some kind of literary event. And he says, well, in March, which would be March of 1987, the theater's going to do Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. Why don't you do it here? Because we're talking about, of course, an homage to Tennessee Williams.
Woo!
And so we went, what? So then, a few weeks later, E and others planned this lunch at Halloween Day in 1986 at Mandina's on Canal Street, and it's Errol Maureen Detweiler, who was working for the mayor's office at the time on special events, and then Beverly and a state tourism official named John Jordell. And Bill Detweiler, Maureen's wonderful husband, was sitting at the bar. He wasn't part of the meeting, and I have to say, I wasn't at the meeting, but I was on the first on the founding board. But anyway, but that first meeting ended up being just perfect because Don was interested in trying to, you know, make something happen, as were Errol and Beverly. But what was going on at the time, though, Susan, is that this was the oil bust. This is 1986. Things are not going really too well in the city from an economy standpoint. And this is before that term, cultural tourism, where, yes, there are events that are now created to try to attract not only locals, but folks from the outside. And we were trying to do that, too. We were trying to attract visitors who would come to New Orleans and go spend their money at local restaurants and in local hotels. It was two-pronged. To certainly revel in the literary heritage and the legacy, but also to ask people from out of town and locals too to, you know, come on down to the quarter and enjoy what we have and let's have a good time.
What do you remember from the very first festival? What was your favorite thing? Can you think back?
Well, I remember just being so amazed as to who we were able to get, because mm-hmm. we ended up, and I guess it was through Kenneth, with the Tennessee Williams official biographer who was still working on the book, and his name was Lyle Leverage.
Yes.
And he actually had some New Orleans connections because he had worked on the wonderful Vernell Bonarises, who still went around, One More Time. I think he might have been like the stage manager. He was very involved. But at the time, Lyle was certainly in New York, and he was the, you know, authorized biographer. So he was working on it. But I remember Tennessee panel. We had a lot of dear friends of Tennessee. But it was primarily at that point, now we're more based at the Motley On, but we have an event at Le Petit actually coming up. But it was primarily at Le Petit. There was a small book fair on the lobby. And also, and you know, we have got to once give more than a nod in those earlier days to Patricia Brady,
absolutely,
our dear friend, who was with the Historic New Orleans Collection. She was the head of publications, but an author and an historian, very important biographer in her own right. With Martha Washington, never looked so good, thanks to her.
And I remember the year after Katrina, you know, Pat said, yeah, we're going to have that festival if we have to stand there and shine flashlights at the stage.
True words, but longtime UNO connections, you know, because from the really the beginning, we would have a one-act play competition. And now we have many competitions, but in the spirit of Tennessee, what's so great about that is that not only do you get a little bit of money, but you know, if you win, okay, and it's, you know, really important judging, but you also get a staged reading, which is administered by the UNO Drama Department. I mean, if I was a young playwright and to mm-hmm. learn that, you know, and let me tell you this, one of the early winners was a gentleman named David Lindsay Abair, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Shrek the Musical? That's his. And other more maybe serious things, too. But Shrek is a huge hit.
And, yeah.
And David Lindsay Abair's bio on Wikipedia, he mentions that he won the Tennessee Festival Play.
Oh, that's so great.
Competition. Yeah.
What are you looking forward to this year?
Well, let me just say one more thing about favorites in the past.
Sure.
One thing that really added to the festival over the years was the presence of the baby brother, Tennessee Williams' baby brother, Dakin, who initially came on his own nickel because
yes.
certainly we didn't have money to bring him in. And he would do readings of his brother's poetry and, of course, he had great stories. And he was very colorful and, you know, in himself. But also, it's hard to believe, Susan, but it's the 30th anniversary of the Stella and Stanley Shouting Contest.
Oh, my gosh.
And let me tell you how that started. We all had worked so hard each weekend, this wonderful long weekend of the festival. And one night, Errol and I are watching the local news, the 10 o'clock news, and after having been very busy, and we see nothing, no coverage of the festival. And then I realized, wait a minute, panels, literary panels, are not very visual.
Mm-hmm.
I have a little bit of a PR background as well as TV producing. And so I've got to come up with something. And that night on the news, the 10 o'clock news, was a feature about B.B. St. Romain was the longtime tour manager for Dr. John. And she was getting married. And she got married on a Harley motorcycle with a cockatoo on her shoulder.
Oh.
And I turned to Errol and said, this is visual, okay? And so I came up with the idea of the Stanley and Stella Shining Contest, because even if you don't know much about Tennessee, you know about Stella.
Absolutely. Minnie's the woman who appeared in a slip on that, you know?
Exactly. It's always so much fun, very, very much fun. But this year, yes, once again, that mix of great panels, Robert Owen Butler is coming back,
mm-hmm.
Maureen Corrigan, Michael Cunningham, the list is very, very long. And of course, lots of local writers. We always pay tribute to our local authors, Morgan Babst, and, you know, the list is long. But in terms of some of the special actual events, Wednesday, March the 25th, we have a one-man show with Rick Simone Friedland called Kind Stranger, and that's at Le Petit. And so I'm so glad we still have a presence at Le Petit.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be great. And then Thursday, there's the annual tribute reading, and that is at the Jazz Museum, a.k.a. The Mint. And CCH Pounder will be with us.
Oh, that's going to be great.
As well as Robert Owen Butler, Sky Jackson, the wonderful poet. And then we also have, as I said, the Scholars Conference. But Friday, that Friday of the festival at Borgard's Hive House, known as BK House, oh my goodness, there'll be excerpts from Tennessee Williams plays, including those Christine Ebersole, River Gray Gardens, and lots of, even Saturday Night Live for a season. But she is amazing. Michael Cerveris, who lives here part of the time, multi-Tony Award winners. Jennifer Nettles, you may remember Sugarland. She's a wonderful singer, but actress too. And remember the cute guy in West Side Story, Tony, who played Tony, Ansel Elgort. In West Side Story, the latest version of the movie of that. And Leslie Castay will be with us as well. And she's such a wonderful local actress as well as teacher. Mm-hmm. But there'll be scenes from various plays and Suddenly Last Summer. Now, I'm real excited because on Saturday, March the 29th, at the Celestine Hotel, which used to be the Maison de Ville, which was one of Tennessee Williams' favorite places to stay after he became rich and famous. He lived in many apartments. We could go for days just on that in the quarter. But I'm going to be interviewing Errol at 4:30 to talk about the history of the festival and also about New Orleans and Mardi Gras in general. But we're definitely going to focus on the festival. And then there's panels on historical fiction and research, and just so many great panels, as you well know, and great tours, too. Also, Call Me Izzy is a Tony Award-winning show from last year, and a local author, Jamie Wax, who wrote this. He's a playwright. He's going to be on this panel talking about it. And Jean Smart was the star of that. She won't be with us, but we have the producer, Charles Erstad, and a wonderful actress who also be doing scenes from it, as well as some music from it as well. So that's on a Sunday, it's kind of closing out the festival. But TennesseeWilliams.net, you know, for all the information.
Well, congratulations, and thank you for all your hard work to make this happen.
Well, thank you so much, Susan. It's just so great to be with you and to work with you in the past. And keep on keeping on, girl.
You too. See you soon.
Thank you.
Tom Andes has moved on to New Orleans, but he's back in and out of town a lot. And he's here at the festival with his first novel, Wait There Till You Hear From Me, a Charlie Prentice novel. So, Tom, what's your day job now? Where are you?
We are in Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is great. I love it. I miss New Orleans, but it's been really wonderful being here. And my day job right now, I'm actually mostly gigging. I'm also a professional musician, mm-hmm. as well as writing. And so that's most of my... Like, I've been playing here. I play in 3 or 4 different bands here. And then I've been doing kind of like little regional tours, like in the Southwest, going over to Arizona, up to Colorado. I went to California for the first time playing music last month. So, and then I'm doing some teaching. I also teach for a place called Writing Workshops, which is a terrific little online writing institution. And I do some freelance work. I do like writing coaching, freelance editing. When we first moved here, I was picking up kind of catering shifts as well on the side, because I used to do that a lot when I lived in New Orleans. But I've mostly, my weekends are mostly filled up with gigging, which has been great. It's been a really pleasant surprise.
So how does that work for you? How does that music enrich your writing life?
You know, I don't know. I don't always know. I'm still trying to maybe figure that out. I think one of the big things is the, like, writing is so solitary, mm-hmm. and I am not, I'm like very much an extrovert. And I think that like I can get really in my own head, and even like, even doing solo gigs or just at a rehearsal with people, there is such a social aspect of music. And I feel like there's kind of a yin and the yang thing from that that gets me, you know, kind of out of my head. And it's also, you know, like I think reading and writing is like, you know, you're trying to get into kind of a flow state, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think that music, that's another way to kind of access that. And I think that has like a good kind of reciprocal effect on sort of on everything else I do. So
I'm curious if you had any reservations about writing a mystery, because there are so many, and so many set in New Orleans, and it is a form with conventions and rules, and you know what
sure.
I mean?
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, very much. I actually, that's a really good question. When I started this, I had a lot of reservations about writing a mystery. I think in part because I have loved, like, Robert B. Parker's Spencer mysteries are part of the reason, like, I love, like, I want to write, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think I had, you know, I have like a master's in English. I have an MFA in writing. And like, that's definitely a culture that I think looks down a little bit on the mystery novel and looks down on some genre fiction. I think that's changing a bit, but I think I actually internalized a lot of that stuff. And then I think that I did a couple drafts of this, and there was an agent who looked at it who did not ultimately represent it, but sent me like really, really amazing notes on it and really kind of helped me find it as a book. And one of her things was like, she's like, you kind of need to decide whether you're going for Chandler or Fellini, I think, for the two things. And I was like, oh, like Chandler, like that's actually, and I think up to that point, I think I hadn't, like, I had this ambivalence about writing a mystery that really showed in the book itself. And I rewrote it. I mean, I rewrote it from first into third person. I cut the first 25,000 words. I did like a huge rewrite, and basically it kind of found itself as a book as a result of that. So, but you know, I actually love the genre, and I mean, I think some of the rules and conventions are things you can have fun with. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't often write poetry, but when I write poetry, I love writing sonnets. Like, I think I like a certain amount of sort of formal convention or sort of guardrails, because I think they give you problems to solve. And so I think there's, you know, there's so many people who you can play into sort of the lazier tropes of like a genre, like the mystery genre, or I think there's so many people now trying to like reinvigorate those tropes or do really interesting things with those tropes. And so I think I found myself more and more drawn to like that kind of writing. You know, even like something like Tana French is like a, you know, mainstream best-selling novelist, but like, I love her mysteries. Like, they're character studies, and they go so deep, you know, into character. So
let's hear a bit about Charlie Prentice. You do something really brilliant in that. You kind of set him up to be a PI, and then he backs away from it.
Yes.
Which cracked me up.
Yeah, he sort of chickens out, basically, on being, he has this sort of draw to that. I mean, I think in a way that's there's the kind of the trope of the reluctant detective or the hesitant detective, and I think I was playing with that a little bit. I also wanted, like, a credible origin story for him, if that makes sense. And I wanted, and likewise, you know, with the fiance character, Gwendolyn, like, I wanted her, there's an extent to which she's kind of the femme fatale, but I wanted her, I think she actually sees, in some respects, she sees the world more clearly than Charles does. So I wanted to sort of like engage some of those tropes like I was talking about, but then also kind of like find a way to make them interesting or kind of undermine them a little bit. You know, I think it makes him relatable in a way, because I think his big fear is the fact he doesn't want to be shot at. Which is actually an entirely reasonable fear, you know, that most of us hopefully have that. So I think that makes him also like, there's an element of like haplessness to him. Jeff Munsterman, the wonderful editor at Crescent City Books, who took this and sort of helped me sort out a couple things with like some edits as doing like a final draft, was, I remember he, on the handwritten on the manuscript he gave me with his edits on it, was like, is Charles actually a good detective? Like, ? Because I think there's times when he is very much sort of solving problems and you see him figuring things out. Mm-hmm. And there are also times when he, I think, actually makes sort of fairly foolish decisions or has like a lot of reservation about doing things. And yeah, that just sort of ended up being part of his character.
Yeah. Well, read the opening for us.
All right. This is Wait There Till You Hear From Me. This is chapter one. On his lunch break, Charles was walking to the French Quarter to try and find a guy named Jerry Williams. New Orleans Central Business District baked in the sunlight. A block away, on Carondelet, the streetcar clattered past. Nothing had prepared Charles Prentice for the heat or the inertia of summer in Louisiana. 3 years here, and he wasn't used to the way everything slowed to a crawl, like swimming through melted butter. "Marshall," he said, "where are you?" Charles had done the grunt work for a private eye in San Francisco for a few years, but one serious encounter with reality scared him from the trade. He'd gone back to school, collected a few degrees, moved halfway across the country. 10 years after packing it in as a PI, he was an office drone, working for a tutoring company as the director of education. His fiance, Gwendolyn, had asked if he had any idea how to find her kid brother. After a few blocks, the heat was suffocating, like breathing through a wet quilt. Charles leaned against a parking meter on the corner of Poydras. He was 36, but he kept in shape. He'd spent a year and a half boxing golden gloves back in California, and if he hadn't won much, he'd made his opponents work. He hoped it wouldn't come to blows with Jerry, but the guy was a hothead, and last year he'd threatened Marshall with the beatdown over a couple $1,000. Charles crossed Canal, walking down Decatur to the Shannon Irish Pub, where Jerry did his day drinking and trolling for customers. Located a few blocks off Bourbon, the place catered to a mix of tourists and locals, quarter rats who never left the French Quarter, Tulane frat boys, and to the repeat visitors who came to the city for the music festival, who were like those same frat boys all grown up, trying to relive their glory days. It had low ceilings, dark wood, and was decorated with rugby pennants and Irish flags. Charles wanted to see if Jerry was there. If he wasn't, Charles was going to ask around, find out if anyone knew the guy, since it was his regular hangout. Charles ordered a soda water, downed it, ordered another one, and gulped that too. Sunlight filled the doorway and the windows in front of the bar. Brown-eyed girl played on the jukebox. On stage, a man noodled on an acoustic guitar. Behind Charles, three men in suits were talking over pints of beer, lawyers drinking lunch. "It's the future," one of them told his table mates. "You can't stand in the way of the future."
Ah, oh, the overheard remarks of New Orleans.
Yeah, yes.
Love that so much.
I was going to say to add to, you know, something you asked earlier about setting a mystery in New Orleans. That was like, our panel at the festival is on that, mm-hmm. on setting. I think New Orleans is like a hard place to write because it casts such a long shadow and it has such a vivid sense of itself. And I think everybody has such a particular idea of what the city is to them. But that was, you know, something it starts in the French Quarter, but a lot of the book is actually set like on the West Bank.
Yeah.
And I wanted to sort of find areas of the city that maybe aren't as mapped in literature as much. And that's why, and we actually used a cover. The cover of the edition of the book from CCB is actually it's a photograph of the GNO bridge, the Crescent City Connection.
Yeah, beautiful cover.
Just because we wanted to sort of accentuate that.
Oh, that's so great. Well, we've been talking with Tom Andes, whose new book is Wait Though Till You Hear From Me, and you can see him at next weekend's Tennessee Williams Festival. Tom, thank you so much. It's so nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's so nice to talk to you too. Can I get one tiny little plug in, or is that annoying?
No, sure.
I'm doing a library event, Nora Navarro Public Library, 5:30, Wednesday, March 25th. It's me, Danny Cherry, John Hebert, and Ariadne Blade. It's kind of a mystery and noir reading at New Orleans Public Library, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. And everyone will do a short reading, sell books, socialize, sign, hang out, take a few questions maybe.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Richard Robbins discusses and signs his new book, First Lady of the New World, Monday, March 23rd at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Nicholas Lemon discusses and signs Returning, A Search for Home Across Three Centuries, Tuesday, March 24th at 6 at Octavia Books. Sally Reeves, Howard Hunter, Hilary Irvine, and David Spielman, creators of a new book entitled New Orleans Garden District, Profiles in Preservation, discuss and sign that book Tuesday, March 24th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. The Friends of the Jefferson Public Library will hold a general meeting Wednesday, March 25th at 10 a.m. at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. The guest speaker will be Laura Boland Wright, Louisiana Master Gardener, who will speak about the New Orleans Botanical Garden. Volunteers will have the opportunity to sign up to help at the next big book sale, set for Friday, April 17th to Sunday, April 19th at the Pontchartrain Center in Kenner. Romy Petit, New Orleans writer and artist, has been leading a three-part series entitled Graphic Novel Boot Camp. That's at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Wednesday, March 25th is the concluding session from 5:30 to 7:30. Writers John Hebert, Danny Cherry, Ariadne Blade, and Tom Andes present a reading of mystery and noir fiction Wednesday, March 25th at 5:30 at the Nora Navarro Library. Angelique Rocher talks about her new graphic novel, The First Freedom, The story of Miss Opal Lee and Juneteenth, Saturday, March 28th at 6 at Baldwin & Company. The 40th Annual Tennessee Williamson New Orleans Literary Festival is March 25th through 29th, primarily at the Hotel Monteleone, but throughout the French Quarter. This year's special guests include Charles Baxter, Maureen Corrigan, Michael Cunningham, Thomas Keith, Martin Sherman, Justin Torres, Boyce Uphold, and Joshua Wheeler. The five-day event includes theatrical productions, walking tours, and a writing marathon. Tickets and info at TennesseeWilliams.net. The 23rd Annual Saints and Sinners LGBTQ Literary Festival takes place March 27th through 29th, also at the Hotel Monteleone. Featured speakers include Margot Dwahi, Robert Fiesler, Jewel Gomez, Daniel W.K. Lee, Thomas Mallon, Gene Redman, Martin Sherman, Justin Torres, and many others. Events include panel discussions, a reading series, craft sessions, and walking tours. Tickets and info at sasfest.org.
And coming up, the Friends of the Jefferson Parish Library System held their big book sale Friday, April 17th through Sunday, April 19th at the Pontchartrain Center, Williams Boulevard at the Lake in Kenner. Hours are Friday and Saturday from 10 to 7 and Sunday from noon to 5. Free admission and free parking. This year's book sale is one of the largest in the New Orleans area, with more than 65,000 items, including gently used adult and children's books, puzzles, DVDs, CDs, and records. April is Poetry Month, and this year's New Orleans Poetry Festival and Small Press Book Fair takes place April 16th through 19th and looks bigger and better than ever, with poets from all over the globe and workshops on everything from bookmaking to litcraft as witchcraft. Best of all, it's all free. Check out nolapoetry.com for the complete listings. And be sure to visit the Small Press Book Fair in the Great Hall of the New Orleans Healing Center.
Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.